staff attorney at the National. Hi, my name is Anna Rich. I'm a senior staff attorney at the National Senior Citizens Law Center. I'm delighted to have you all here today, and I'm also delighted to introduce our two speakers for today. The first will be Amber Cutler, who's a staff attorney at the National Senior Citizens Law, National Senior Law Center's Los Angeles office. And we'll also have Sylvia Yee from the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. So welcome and thank you, Amber and Sylvia, for coming to share your expertise today.
Thank you, Anna. This is Amber from the National Senior Citizens Law Center, and today we are going to be presenting the Coordinated Care Initiative Basics Training. If you guys have any questions that you want to pose during the webinar, please type your questions into the chat box, and we will try to answer your questions during the webinar presentation. And if we are unable to get to your question during the presentation, we will do so after the presentation to the best of our ability. Everyone will be on mute during the presentation, so again, the only way to ask questions will be through that chat function. So we're going to get started. Two first slides are just a brief explanation of the National Senior Citizens Law Center and of DREDF, so I'm not going to spend any time on those, and we're just going to dive right into the Coordinated Care Initiative and what it is. So this presentation is going to focus on the what, who, where, when, and why of the Coordinated Care Initiative. In a nutshell, the Coordinated Care Initiative is a new state program that changes the delivery of Medi-Cal long-term services and supports, and Medicare to dual eligibles and seniors and persons with disabilities living in 8 California counties, which is set to begin no sooner than April 1st, 2014, and it is aimed at coordinating care and reducing health care spending. And I want to point out that the April 1st date is a new date that just changed last week. It was initially, the start date was going to be October 1st of 2013, and then that was postponed to January 1st. And now most recently, it has been changed to no sooner than April 1st of 2014. So what is the before I get started, I forgot the glossary. Just so you guys were all on the same page about what all these terms are that I'm going to be throwing out during the presentation, I'm going to go through some of the definitions of that I'll be using throughout the presentation. The first is obviously the Coordinated Care Initiative, or the CCI, which will also include CalMeta Connect. Dual eligibles are on there. Those are individuals that are eligible for both Medicare and Medi-Cal benefits, also known as Medi-Medis. The other major ones I'm going to define for you are the Long-Term Support and Services, or LTSS. That is an umbrella term under the Coordinated Care Initiative that has a very specific meaning. It refers to 4 specific programs that are provided through Medi-Cal. The first is In-Home Supportive Services, or IHSS. And that is the program that is paid for through Medi-Cal, where it allows a beneficiary to remain safely in the home rather than a nursing facility or other institution. It includes services like house cleaning, shopping, meal preparation, laundry, personal care services, and it's county administered, and individuals are assessed by the county, and the individual IHSS consumer has the right to hire, fire, and supervise their IHSS provider. The second program under that LTSS is the Community-Based Adult Services, or CBAS, which was formerly known as Adult Day Healthcare. Those are those licensed community-based day health program that provide services to older persons with either chronic medical or cognitive or mental conditions or disabilities that are at risk for institutional care. And there are certain eligibility requirements people have to meet in order to receive CBAS services. The other is the Multi-Purpose Senior Services Program, or MSSP. Again, that is a site-provided service that's both social and healthcare management, and it is aimed at the frail or elderly clients who are certifiable for nursing home placement, but who can still live safely home in the community, and they must meet certain eligibility requirements to be a part of that program. And then the final Medi-Cal benefit that falls under that LTSS is nursing facility care. And then the final The definition I'm going to point out here are seniors and persons with disabilities, or SPDs. Again, that has a very specific meaning under the Coordinated Care Initiative. I'm referring to individuals who have Medi-Cal only. So not dual eligibles, not individuals with Medicare, but individuals who only have Medi-Cal. And they have received that Medi-Cal benefit or are eligible for that Medi-Cal benefit based on their age or because they have a disability. So there's a glossary of terms that you guys can refer back to throughout the presentation if you need to. So what is the Coordinated Care Initiative? If there is one slide I want you to pay attention to, it is this one. The Coordinated Care Initiative encompasses three major changes. The first change is mandatory enrollment into Medi-Cal managed care. So back in 2011, California started moving seniors and persons with disabilities, or those SPDs, into managed care for their Medi-Cal benefit. However, there were certain populations and services that were carved out of managed care. For example, individuals with share of cost were excluded from enrollment into managed care. Also, individuals living in a nursing facility were excluded. And most notably, dual eligible beneficiaries, or those with both Medicare and Medi-Cal, were also excluded from mandatory enrollment into Medi-Cal managed care. Not under the CCI. That's where this major change comes in. Now all of those populations are going to have to sign up for managed care for their Medi-Cal benefit. So in order to receive their Medi-Cal benefit, they're going to be in a managed care plan and receiving their benefit through a managed care plan. So that's change number one. Change number two is the integration of LTSS into the managed care benefit package. So like I said, back in 2011, when SPDs were mandatorily enrolled in Medi-Cal managed care, there were certain services that were carved out of the benefit package. And those services included those LTSS services that I was just talking about, so IHSS and nursing facility care, CBAS and MSSP. Well, CBAS went in last year. But the other three are now also being integrated into managed care. So for example, in an individual right now who is living in the community who is an SPD or has Medi-Cal only, they are probably in managed care for their Medi-Cal benefit. Let's say they go into the hospital and then they have to go into a nursing facility. Today, if they went into that nursing facility, they would be disenrolled from managed care after about a month in the facility. And then their nursing facility care would be paid by Medi-Cal through fee-for-service. Under the CCI, that will not be the case. They will stay in managed care, and their managed care plan will be responsible for paying their nursing facility care. So that's change number two, the integration of those long-term services and supports into managed care. The third change is the change that most people are talking about and you've probably heard the most about, and that is the integration of Medicare and Medi-Cal into one managed care plan. And that program is called CalMediConnect. So we're taking both someone's Medicare benefits and their Medi-Cal benefits, and we are placing them both into a managed care plan so that they will be receiving their benefits, both sets of benefits, through the managed care plan with one card. So far, CalMediConnect has received federal approval through a memorandum of understanding that the state of California entered into with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services back in March of 2013. The other two changes, the state of California has submitted approval for those changes to the federal government and is awaiting approval of those changes. And there's no reason to believe those won't be approved, they just haven't happened yet. So, a major change that happened back in May was that all three of these changes were, when the law was first enacted to get this program off the ground, all three of them were going to move forward together. And if they couldn't move forward together, they wouldn't move together at all. Under the budget bill that was passed in May, that changed. All three of these components can now move together or move separately from each other or be delinked. So that means that CalMediConnect, for example, could move forward where the other two changes do not. Or the other two changes could move forward and CalMediConnect may not. That's just something that could happen. But right now, all three changes are set to happen together and they are set to begin no sooner than April 1st of 2014. Just to give you guys an overview of what the current system looks like and what we're moving into. So right now, individuals are receiving their Medi-Cal services. Most individuals, for example, SPDs, are receiving their Medi-Cal benefits through managed care. But there's still a large chunk of individuals who get their Medi-Cal benefits through fee-for-service. For example, all dual eligibles right now are getting their services through fee-for-service. LTSS, all those long-term services and supports are being paid through the fee-for-service system right now, except for CPAS. And that is, you know, your IHSS and your nursing facility care, they're all being paid through that fee-for-service. And then Medicare benefits, the default is that most people get their Medicare benefits paid through fee-for-service. But there are some people, some individuals with Medicare who are getting their benefits through managed care. And that would be a Medicare Advantage plan or a dual special need plan, which is a special Medicare Advantage plan aimed at duals, but they're getting their benefits through managed care for their Medicare. But there are fewer of those. The default is fee-for-service. The Coordinated Care Initiative is moving everything into managed care. So you're going to see the Medi-Cal benefits being delivered through managed care, the LTSS being delivered through managed care, and Medicare being delivered through managed care. Now, behavioral health has a little asterisk by it because it is there are specialty mental health benefits that are paid for by the county and administered through the county. And that will continue to be the case, that's the case now, and that will continue to be the case under the Coordinated Care Initiative. So that's what we're moving towards. And just to give you an overview, so fee-for-service, this is what it looked like. We saw a senior with person with disability going to see their different providers. And as long as that provider accepted their Medicare or Medi-Cal card, they could see that provider. And that provider provided services, for example, an exam or an x-ray or an evaluation. And then that provider for that service would bill the Department of Healthcare Services or Medicare for that particular service. And Medicare and DHCS would pay them for that service. So that's the fee-for-service model. Under managed care, we have a senior with person with disability who instead of going to see their provider directly, they're in an agreement with the health plan. And the health plan is receiving a lump sum of money from DHCS or Medicare or both to provide services to that senior or person with disability. And then the health plan contracts with the different providers to provide those services to the senior or person with disability. And those providers are within the health plan's network. But as we all know, there are certain providers that are not within the health plan's network, and those providers, the senior or person with disability, can no longer see because they are outside of the plan's network. So that's kind of managed care in a brief summary to give you guys an idea of what we're moving into. And just to review who is impacted by the Coordinated Care Initiative, it's going to be individuals who are eligible for both Medicare and Medi-Cal, so are dual eligibles, and then those individuals who have Medi-Cal only, or SPDs. Individuals who only have Medicare are not going to be impacted by the Coordinated Care Initiative. Different groups of duals and seniors and persons with disabilities are going to be affected differently by the Coordinated Care Initiative. And this is what makes the Coordinated Care Initiative incredibly complex. And I'm not going to go into all of these different exceptions and exclusions in detail because that's beyond the scope of this basics presentation, but I'm just going to give you guys a sense of how different populations are treated differently under the Coordinated Care Initiative. For example, SPDs, so those individuals with Medi-Cal only that are already in Medi-Cal managed care, they're not going to see a huge change. They're going to get a notice that is going to tell them that their long-term services and supports are now going to be integrated into their managed care plan. They're not going to have to do anything. They're just going to be told that where before they would have gotten those services through fee-for-service, now their managed care plan will be providing those services. So that's one population being affected. Then there are those SPDs that will remain exempt from mandatory enrollment in Medi-Cal managed care. And those are individuals, for example, who live in a veteran's home individuals who successfully obtain a medical exemption request because they have a chronic condition and need to continue to see their providers outside of managed care. There are very few of those individuals, but they will be impacted by the CCI. They will get notices, but they may remain exempt from managed our enrollment in Medi-Cal managed care. Then we have those dual eligibles that will be passively enrolled into CalMedi Connect, and that's most dual eligibles. Most will be passively enrolled into CalMedi Connect, and I will go into passive enrollment in a second. But then we have some dual eligibles that can enroll in CalMeta Connect, but who will not be subject to passive enrollment. And so who are those individuals? They're individuals who are enrolled in Kaiser currently. They're individuals who live in certain zip codes in San Bernardino, or individuals who are currently in a home and community-based service waiver. They can disenroll from that waiver and enroll in CalMeta Connect, but they're not going to receive notices about CalMeta Connect. And then finally, there are dual eligibles that cannot participate in CalMeta Connect. And those are individuals with end-stage renal disease, except for certain individuals living in Orange County and San Mateo County. There are individuals receiving services from a regional center, individuals who live in certain zip codes in LA County, San Bernardino, and Riverside. So as you can tell, there are a lot of exceptions and exclusions and exceptions to the exceptions. And like I said, we're not going to go through all of those, but just be aware that there are many different populations, and many of those populations will be treated differently under the Coordinated Care Initiative. So the total impact of the Coordinated Care Initiative is a little over 1 million people. And what does this exactly boil down to? We have about 418,000 dual eligible beneficiaries who are going to receive notices about enrollment into CalMeta Connect. However, there's only going to be about 395,000 that can actually be enrolled into CalMeta Connect. And that is because Los Angeles County will have a cap on enrollment of 200,000. And then there's about 592,000 additional individuals who either are not eligible for CalMeta Connect or not subject to passive enrollment into CalMeta Connect, or who just have Medi-Cal only but aren't in managed care yet, who will now go into managed care for their Medi-Cal benefit. So in total, we have about 1 million individuals who are going to be impacted by the Coordinated Care Initiative. So I'm going to go ahead and stop there for questions.
Thanks, Amber. We don't currently have any questions about the, so I would encourage people who do have questions or comments that they want to share with the audience to submit those using the chat function. So there's a tab that says room, and you just type in your chat, your question or comment through the chat function, and then the next time we take a break for questions, I'll share those with Amber or Sylvia.
Great. Thanks, Anna. All right, so back to CalMeta Connect. CalMeta Connect only impacts dual eligible beneficiaries, so not those SPDs with Medi-Cal only. So duals will be subject to passive enrollment into CalMeta Connect. And what does passive enrollment mean? Passive, an individual, a dual eligible, who will be subject to passive enrollment will receive a notice, will receive notices about enrollment into CalMeta Connect. And when they get those notices, there will be three options. The beneficiary has the option of opting in to CalMeta Connect. And then they will be given the choice of what plan under the CalMeta Connect program they can choose. And when they opt in, so they'll choose their plan, and it will be a CalMeta Connect plan that will integrate both their Medicare and Medi-Cal benefit. So that's option number one when they receive those notices. Option number two is that they could decide that they don't want to take part in CalMeta Connect. So they can opt out of CalMeta Connect or keep their Medicare the same. That means that they can stay in fee-for-service Medicare if that's where they are, or they could decide that they want to join a Medicare Advantage plan, or they could decide that they want to enroll in PACE, for example. But no matter what, they get to make a choice about their Medicare. However, even if they decide that they don't want to participate in CalMeta Connect and they want to keep Medicare the way it is or do something different with their Medicare benefit, they still have to choose a Medi-Cal plan for their Medi-Cal benefit. So no matter what, a dual eligible is going to have to select a managed care plan for their Medi-Cal benefit, with very few exceptions. So that's important to remember, that even if an individual decides that they don't want to participate in CalMeta Connect, the Coordinated Care Initiative still impacts them because they still have to choose a managed care plan for their Medi-Cal benefit. Finally, if they get that notice and they do nothing, this is where passive enrollment comes in. This is what passive enrollment means. If they do nothing, an individual will be automatically enrolled into a CalMedi Connect plan. The state will choose that plan for them. So that's where passive enrollment comes in, is in that if an individual does nothing, they're going to be automatically enrolled into a CalMedi Connect plan that will integrate both their Medicare and Medi-Cal benefit into one managed care plan. Now, it's important to remember that even if someone gets passively enrolled into CalMedi Connect and they decide that they don't want to be there, that they can always disenroll on the Medicare side. They can do that at any point. The Medicare side is optional, but they're still going to have to be in a managed care plan for their Medi-Cal benefit. So just to reiterate, even if a dual eligible opts out of CalMedi Connect, they still are going to have to enroll in a Medi-Cal managed care plan. So individuals who have Medi-Cal only or SPDs and dual eligibles who either aren't eligible for CalMedi Connect, who decide not to participate in CalMedi Connect, all of them are still going to have to choose a Medi-Cal managed care plan. And this includes individuals who are in Medicare Advantage plans. Medicare Advantage for the year of 2014, they will not be individuals who are enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan will not be subject to passive enrollment in CalMedi Connect. That means they're not going to receive notices about CalMedi Connect. They are still going to receive notices, though, telling them that they're going to have to pick a plan for their Medi-Cal managed care benefit or for their Medi-Cal benefit. So they're still going to have to choose a managed care plan for their Medi-Cal benefit. They're just not going to receive any notices about CalMedi Connect. And just so you know, for definition purposes, that DSNP there is a dual special needs plan, and that is just a special type of Medicare Advantage plan for individuals who are dual eligible, but it's just a Medicare Advantage plan. And those individuals aren't going to receive those notices about CalMedi Connect, but they're still going to have to choose a Medi-Cal plan for their Medi-Cal benefit in 2014. So, Anna, I'm going to go ahead and stop there again for questions.
Well, we still don't have any questions that are substantive submitted through the chat function. So, again, either that means that everything is clear and no one has any questions, or it means you folks are shy about using the chat function. So I would really encourage people to submit questions. And is there, Amber, is there anything else you want to add before we turn it over to Sylvia?
No, I don't think so. Go ahead, Sylvia.
Thanks, Amber. Well, you have been remarkably clear, so I'm not surprised there are no questions. I expect more after my sections. So I'm going to start by looking more specifically into what the CalMedi Connect benefits actually will be. So these are the benefits that are supposed to be available to duals if they join the CalMedi Connect. So first of all, let's look at what the plans have to provide, are required to provide. They have to provide Medicare services A, which is basically inpatient. It's hospital care. Medicare services Part B, which is medical care, everything from providers and outpatient hospital care. And also Medicare services Part D, which includes prescription drug coverage. Plans are also required to provide Medi-Cal services, which include all the long-term supports and services. These are the ones that Amber talked about earlier, IHSS, CBAS, nursing facility services, and MSSP waiver services. The additional thing that is supposed to be provided under the waiver and just to the CalMedi Connect individuals are vision. That's preventive, restorative, and emergency vision services, and non-emergency transportation. Now, the non-emergency transportation is actually capped. We're not sure yet what that cap is and how it will work, but plans apparently are able to cap it, and we don't know what happens once a cap is reached. Another thing to note is that Medi-Cal services are going to include dental as of May 2014. And that's for all Medi-Cal beneficiaries, not just for the CalMedi Connect folks. The other thing to note is that the big benefit, really, that CalMedi Connect is supposed to provide is care coordination. That's having all your services available under one umbrella, the umbrella of the plan. all your benefits are supposed to be paid for that way, and the plan is supposed to help you coordinate those services. So that's one of the primary benefits. You will not have to be dealing with two systems. You should be dealing with Medi-Cal and Medicare under that one umbrella with one card. Now, CalMedi Connect also involves some optional services, and these are services that are at the discretion of the plan. These include waiver-like services that were available under home and community-based service waivers. Well, the waivers are still around, but under if you are receiving a home and community-based services waiver now, these benefits are not discretionary. These same types of benefits under CalMedi Connect will be discretionary. And these are the kinds of services like home and facility respite, community transition services to help you adapt back to the community after an extended stay in a nursing home, for example. Home accessibility adaptations, if your mobility is affected and you need modifications to your home to be able to move around in that home in the community. Private duty nursing, these are all the kinds of additional services that a plan may well want to provide you because it will help you as a member to stay out of a hospital and remain in the community, but a plan is not at this point required to provide them to you. So another optional service that a plan could offer is additional IHSS-like services, services involving chore hours, the other kinds of assistance that you may need to stay in your home safely. Now, there are also some services that will be provided and will remain outside of the plans. And the two main categories of these would be specialty mental health services and behavioral health drug Medi-Cal benefits. So these have been carved out of the demonstration. They have traditionally have been paid for by the county and provided by the county, and that's going to continue. So I'm going to stop there for a second and see if there are additional questions about CalMedi Connect benefits.
I don't see any questions currently submitted, but I would be curious to hear from you, Sylvia, if at what point we're going to know more details about things like exactly what's in the vision benefit or exactly what a particular plan is going to do to provide care coordination.
Those additional details, is there a timeline on that, Amber, as to exactly when additional details have to be provided?
I think that the plans are still trying to figure out what these different benefits will look like. They're working those details out in their three-way contracts, which hopefully will be completed by September. That's when that's supposed to happen. But with the delay until April 1st, I imagine that we might not get details about the extent of these benefits until further down the road.
I think it will be the critical point is that people will really need to know these details, of course, is that when they're having to choose between plans. I mean, that's when it's really going to, the rubber hits the road. You'll need to know, what am I going to be getting? I don't know of a set date right now that this information is supposed to be clarified or made public, widely public.
Okay. And then a couple other questions that just came in. First, for people who are in a Medi-Cal funded nursing home and are getting Medi-Cal long-term care, will the financial eligibility criteria change at all for people who are in CalMedi Connect or a managed care plan?
I don't believe it is supposed to change, but do you have additional information on that, Amber?
No, everything should remain the same. The point of these transitions is not to make a beneficiary any more responsible financially for any of the benefits that they are currently receiving or take away any of the benefits that they are currently receiving. It's just a change in how the services are being delivered, and it's supposed to better coordinate those services so that costs are reduced that way, but not through making the beneficiary any more responsible financially or at the cost of losing any benefits.
One more question, and then we'll go back to the presentation. Alyssa wants to know if we could talk a little bit more about care coordination that's provided by a health plan and how that compares to the kind of care coordination or case management that someone would get from an MSSP program or a CBAS program. And also, can you get both the care coordination from a plan and also be enrolled in MSSP and CBAS, or could the plans contract with the MSSP or the CBAS providers to fulfill that care coordination function?
Some of these details are going to be worked out. I think though that the, absolutely it is possible for plans to contract with CBAS, existing CBAS providers. They have to contract with MSSP providers. And I think the goal, the ideal is that for individuals who are being served by care coordination now, that there will be as little disruption as possible, just as Amber indicated. So that if as an individual you are receiving care coordination and you like it, you should not be able to have to give that up. Now in practice, how that will work, that a plan will actually be able to go out and make all of the contractual arrangements they need to and should, that's not a done deal yet. I mean, just to put it bluntly, I think some of the plans are working really hard on that and working really hard on a long-term services and supports network that will include experienced care coordinators and experienced LTSS providers. I mean, the jury's out. I don't know. I don't think that we can say yet how successful that will be.
No,
Amber,
no, I think you covered it well, Sylvia.
Okay, well, we have a few more questions, and please keep sending them in. If we'll take some other breaks later in the presentation, and also if Amber and Sylvia can't get to all the questions, they'll make sure to follow up with you later. But why don't we turn it back over to you, Sylvia, to keep going with the slides.
Sure. We'll be looking a little bit more closely here now at the kinds of plans that will be available in the county. So, reviewing again, the CCI will be implemented in 8 of California's counties, and these are the largest and most populous counties. So as of right now, the intention is that all 3 aspects of the CCR are going to take place in April 2014. Going on to the next slide, the different Medi-Connect plans that are available in each country, in each county. In general, that you can see from the slide that there are 2 counties that in which you will not have a choice of plans. In Orange County and in San Mateo County, there is just 1 county organized health system. So there is 1 plan and 1 option. As a dual eligible, you can join that plan or you can just opt out of MediConnect entirely. In 5 other counties, in Alameda, Riverside and San Bernardino, Santa Clara and San Diego, I'll just leave San Diego up for a second. Santa Clara and in LA, there are essentially 2 choices of plan. So you can choose from those 2 plans and they should be providing you with information as to what each will offer. There's a further wrinkle with LA, which I'll cover in a second. San Diego is actually a little bit different in that they actually have 4 health plans there. So you have even more choice there about which one you could choose to be your CalMediConnect plan. The wrinkle in Los Angeles is that, yes, there are 2 main plans, but LA Care is further subcontracting with additional plans. And so you have some more choices there. And yes, one more complication in LA, the most populous county. Under the memorandum of understanding that was signed between the state and the federal government, duals who are already Kaiser members will not be subject to the passive enrollment. So if you or your client, you are a dual eligible, you are already a member of Kaiser as a dual eligible, if you do nothing when you get these your CalMediConnect notices, you presumably will just get to stay a dual who is a Kaiser member. If you are a dual and you are not a member of managed care, but when you get your CalMediConnect notices, you want to become a member of Kaiser, I'm not absolutely certain about this. I think that you should be able to do that, but there is maybe some legislation that could affect that. So that is something that you need to specifically check. So if you are in LA, you are a dual, you're thinking of joining CalMediConnect, and you're thinking that you want to choose Kaiser, that's a specific question to check with LA Care. So I just wanted to make that available. Going on to the next slide, and there will be an opportunity for questions soon. So as we've said, April 1st, it's a slightly unfortunate date perhaps, April Fool's Day. It's the day that implementation of the CCI is supposed to start. And everyone is supposed to get a 90-day notice. So your notice about all these changes is the first time it's supposed to come to you is on January 1st, or perhaps January 2nd, given that January 1st is a postal holiday. Here's the enrollment timing and process, which, again, like much of what we've talked about, is somewhat complicated. There are essentially three processes and timelines. The simplest one, I'll say, would be in San Mateo, which is a county organized health system, so there's one plan. There is no voluntary and only enrollment period. That is, there's no initial period during which you as a dual could voluntarily decide on your own to enter the plan immediately. Passive enrollment will begin April 1st, 2014, just like in the other eight counties, but the passive enrollment is going to be phased in over 1 month. So essentially, everyone is going to be enrolled all at once. And where San Mateo is, the its state of readiness and its size is what helped, I think, to determine this. So San Mateo is unique in that. The other, there are five other counties, six, I guess, Alameda, Santa Clara, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, and San Diego. Their timeline is a little different. Again, they have no voluntary only enrollment period. The same start date, April 1st, but passive enrollment is supposed to be phased in over a one-year period, over 12 months. And the phasing method is by the first day of your birth month. So that's if your birthday is in August 1st, August 6th, August 8th, by August 1st, you're supposed to be enrolled. Los Angeles, as the largest county, has some more safeguards and some more complications. There is an initial 3-month voluntary only enrollment period that begins on April 1st. So passive enrollment doesn't actually begin until July 1st, 2014. The rest of it, how the passive enrollment works, how long it's the period over which passive enrollment will happen, is not decided yet. I think Los Angeles is in a stakeholder period still when they're discussing these things. So what's going on? I'll just leave that. There are some exceptions, having gone through that rather complex enrollment timeline. There are some exceptions to the general enrollment strategies. Some of them are listed here. Probably the most major exception is that dual eligibles who are already enrolled in MSSP, it may be that they will all go into managed care all at once, but I don't think that's completely decided yet. And how whether that will that date will vary between the counties is also unclear. Some other exceptions are dual eligibles who are already enrolled in Medi-Cal managed care in Alameda and Santa Clara. Dual eligibles who are reassigned to Part D as of January 1st, 2013, and those who are going to be subject to Part D reassignment January 1st, 2014. So you can see that there are some exceptions. It's good to keep them in mind, but for the vast majority of people, April 1st is the date to really watch out for, and you will be getting your notices prior to that date. So I'm going to stop here again to see if there are additional questions.
Yes, we have several. One I think might reflect some misunderstanding is maybe an opportunity to review some of the concepts here. Someone wanted to know if a dual eligible opts out of a plan, does that mean that they don't have dual Medi-Cal Medicare coverage anymore?
Oh, okay. No, your status as a dual eligible, someone who receives Medicare and Medi-Cal services, is not changed by the Coordinated Care Initiative. The Coordinated Care Initiative changes how you receive those services, but not your eligibility for them. So if you opt out, that means that by opting out, I assume then that you must be in fee-for-service right now, that you will keep getting your Medicare services the way you're getting them now, through fee-for-services. But your Medi-Cal services, your long-term services and support, you will have to join a managed care plan to get those. So distinguishing between your Medi-Cal and your Medicare services.
Right. And someone who's a dual will stay a dual as long as they remain eligible. That makes sense. Okay. One other question, a couple questions actually relating to rates. Do you know when the providers are going to get rates for participation in the CalMedi Connect?
We continue to hear that they are working, working on them, I believe they are. I believe they're working quite hard on this. But I have no prediction as to the date that will be made
clear. And do either of you are you willing to hazard a prediction about whether those rates will be high enough to ensure a sufficient number of providers?
Well, I think there needs to be a distinction made. So plans are going to receive, to just simplify things a little bit, they're going to receive a lump sum for each beneficiary, a rate from both CMS and DHCS to provide both Medi-Cal and Medicare services. So this sort of like lump sum payment to the plans, that's the plans rate. But the point of CalMedi Connect is not to, in fact, The point is not to reduce payment to the providers, rather it's to reduce utilization or change utilization. So providers are supposed to, and it's guaranteed by the law that they'll receive the same rates that they're currently getting under the Medi-Cal rate, and the hope is that they would still get the same rate for Medicare. However, the Medicare law has some flexibility in that. But the hope is that the providers will continue to receive the same rates that they currently receive under Medicare and Medi-Cal, and that it will just be shifts in utilization that will reduce spending and result in savings. And that's how the kind of rate process works. So what's being negotiated right now are the rates that the plans are actually going to receive from the government, both the state and federal government. And so they're trying to negotiate those rates now so that the plans can sufficiently contract and provide the services that they are required to provide underneath the program. Does that help, Anna?
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. And then specific, Alameda County specific question is whether the Kaiser's Senior Advantage Special Needs Plan is still going to be available in Alameda County, as far as you guys know.
Yes, as far as we know, the Kaiser has no intention of taking away its special needs plan. And like I said earlier, individuals who are in a Medicare Advantage plan, including those dual special needs plans, they are not subject to passive enrollment in CalMeda Connect. So those individuals aren't even going to receive notices about CalMeda Connect. The only thing they're going to receive notices about is joining a Medi-Cal plan. And I think Kaiser's Senior Advantage Special Needs Plan is actually a truly integrated plan where their Medi-Cal benefit is already being integrated into their Medicare benefit, if I remember correctly. And so that means that they're probably just going to be able to stay in Kaiser for both their Medi-Cal and Medicare benefit.
Great, thanks.
If I could just add one thought to the person who was asking about the rates. Obviously, rates are a key component of a provider's decision whether to join a plan or not. There are a lot of other factors, and some for a lot of providers, I think the whole administrative, what is perceived as an administrative burden if you join a plan is a big issue. So that's something that for you all as advocates and as patients can actually talk to your providers about in terms of helping to try to persuade an important provider to join a plan. And I just wanted to make that point.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks to you both. I think that's it for questions for right now. So I'll turn it back over to Amber to go on with the slides. But if anyone has any further questions, please feel free to submit those using the chat function.
Thanks, Anna. Individuals who are going to be subject to CalMeda Connect, either passive enrollment in CalMeda Connect, and also individuals who are just going to have to choose a plan for their Medi-Cal benefit, are going to receive three notices. And those notices are going to come out at 90 days, 60 days, and 30 days prior to enrollment. So let's say you're someone who has a birthday on April 8th, for example, your passive enrollment date is going to be April 1st, 2014. And like I said before, an individual has three options when they get that notice if it's for CalMeda Connect. They can opt in right away. They can opt out, at which point they'll still have to choose a Medi-Cal managed care plan, or they can do nothing. And if they do nothing, they will be automatically enrolled on April 1st. So they'll get their first notice in January, their second notice in February, and their third notice in March with enrollment on April 1st. And I just give the example also of an August date of birth, where they'll receive a notice in May, then June, and then July with enrollment on August 1st, 2014. And that's the same for someone who's just going to have to choose a Medi-Cal managed care plan as well. They're going to receive those three notices telling them that they need to choose a plan, and then if they don't choose a plan, one will be selected for them, and they will be enrolled into that managed care plan. So that's how the notices will work. And those notices will contain, the 90-day notice will be primarily informational, just letting them know that change is occurring, and sort of a general description of what the change will be. The 60-day notice is really the meat of the information that a beneficiary is going to receive. They're going to receive a notice, and it's already going to have a plan on there. It's already going to have a default plan listed. And the way that the state does that is that they're going to collect data, if it's for CalMeda Connect, from both Medicare utilization data and from Medi-Cal. And if it's just Medi-Cal, they look at the Medi-Cal utilization data. And the primary factor is who the primary care physician is, or who the person is that beneficiary is seeing the most. And they're going to choose the plan where that provider is within the plan's network. And it's this algorithm, and it's pretty complex, but they're just going to choose the plan based on that utilization data. So it's already going to have that default plan on that notice. And then there's going to be a choice packet. And that choice packet is going to actually explain how a beneficiary can make a choice about which plan to choose. It's going to include what factors a beneficiary should consider in making that choice. So for example, is your specialist in the network? Is your primary provider in the network? Is your therapist in the network? Is your pharmacy in the network? So it will include information on how to select a plan. And then there will be a health plan guide that will describe the different health plans that are available in that person's county. And that will include what benefits that health plan is providing. Because the goal, what Sylvia explained, is that the CalMedica Net plans can kind of differentiate themselves. There are certain required benefits that they have to provide, but there are also other benefits that they can provide that are above and beyond those required benefits, those care plan option services. So they could be providing a whole bunch of those benefits depending on the plan. And so the health plan guide is going to help a beneficiary compare those plans and see what kind of services each one offers. And then finally, there's going to be a provider directory, which is going to show which providers are in which networks. So the 60-day packet is going to have a lot of information in it. And then finally, they're going to receive a 30-day notice that will be a reminder notice that will have that default plan on it if they haven't actually chosen a plan. And if they've actually affirmatively chosen a plan, there's going to be that affirmative choice listed on that reminder notice. So that's kind of the notices, a description of them, and what beneficiaries can anticipate in terms of notices. If we look at the reasons behind why the Coordinated Care Initiative is occurring, the state and the Department of Healthcare Services and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are looking to improve access to care and promote person-centered planning. They're also trying this new model to try to keep people in the community longer. Placing people in nursing facilities and hospital readmissions or unnecessary hospital readmissions are very costly. And dual eligibles, more than any other population, are the highest costing population. They have chronic conditions and medically frail. So the idea is to try to coordinate those benefits in a better way to improve the care and to keep them in the community and provide the right type of care, which will ultimately lead to more cost savings for the state and federal government. So those are the reasons that the state has provided for for changing the way that we are delivering health care here in California. And so we're sort of a long way through the process. And as you know, it's been moved back again to April 1st. And a lot of that is, I think, the state's recognition that there's a lot of moving parts with regard to the Coordinated Care Initiative. The three major changes are complex. And there's a lot, this is a fundamental change in the way that healthcare is being delivered to individuals. And so there's a lot of readiness that has to happen. And so the MOU was signed back in March 2013, but as Sylvia mentioned, the LA enrollment process still needs to be finalized. The plans have been undergoing readiness reviews, which means that there have been desktop reviews, meaning kind of paperwork reviews, but there have also been on-site visits from a third-party contractor looking at the plan systems that are in place and policies that are in place to make sure that the plans are ready to provide these services. Because for a lot of the plans, this is the first time that they're going to be responsible for long-term services and supports. And it's bringing Medicare and Medi-Cal into one care coordination. So they want to make sure that the plans are ready. And the plans are still contracting. They're still contracting with CMS and with the Department of Healthcare Services and trying to develop their rates and make sure that those are all together. And there's three-way contracts that have to be developed where really the meat and details are supposed to be of what the plans will be responsible for. And the plans are also still contracting with all the different providers that they're trying to build up their network. They're having to contract with all of those Medicare providers. They're having to contract with all the LTSS providers. They're having to make contracts with the counties. They have to get into contracts with the IHSS public authorities and the behavioral health counties, and just to make sure that they have all of their network in place in order to have adequate network to support this new population that's coming into managed care. They're developing notices that will have to go out to beneficiaries, and all that has to happen before people are actually subject to enrollment. So there's just a lot that has to be done before that April 1st date, and you can imagine that was a lot to get done before that January 1st date and why it was necessary to move that until April 1st. So I'm going to go ahead and stop there, Anna, and I'm going to actually let Sylvia go ahead and finish up before we take any questions.
Okay, so we'll go on and have Sylvia finish out, and then we'll end, save the questions till the very end.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you, Amber and Anna. And here we are, the meat of the choice. Should your client enroll in CalMedi Connect? The slide tells you whether to enroll in CalMedi Connect is an individual choice, and it's absolutely correct. But I really want to emphasize here, it's only a choice if you know you have a choice and you actually make one. Because of passive enrollment and how it works, if you do nothing, you will be placed in a plan. And then it's not your choice. As a dual eligible, if you don't want to be in CalMedi Connect, you have to actively opt out of it. And on the Medi-Cal side, there really is only a choice of which plan. And that's only true for those in certain counties. If you want or need or rely on Medi-Cal long-term supports and services or on home and community-based services like IHSS or CBAS, you must join a managed care plan to keep getting or to start getting those services. So that's an important thing to really remember. Going back to the choice, however, it's not a simple choice. It involves a lot of factors. So some of those factors include, does the particular plan that you're looking at have the kind of provider networks that include your current medical providers, your current doctors, your current specialists, or if they only have some of them, then you actually have to start thinking, well, who do I really need? Who's critical to me? You have to think about, or if your current provider isn't there, does the plan contract with or have relationships with specialists and other providers that are equally good that you would consider going to, or treatment centers that will know what they're doing with regard to your specific conditions and disabilities? Does the plan you're thinking about have strong relationships with the kinds of social service providers and long-term supports and services providers that are important to you? Does the client have a course of treatment? Do you or your client have a course of treatment that should not be interrupted? How important are the additional benefits that are supposed to be available under CalMedi Connect? How important are those to you, vision and transportation? They can be very important to many individuals. And just to note that because adult dental is now going to be restored for all Medi-Cal enrollees as of May 2014, that in itself, the dental, is not necessarily a strong incentive to enroll in CalMedi Connect, since it will be available to all Medi-Cal beneficiaries. Another factor, and this is a critical one, will the plan improve you or your client's care coordination? I know many individuals with disabilities who do manage all of their services, all of their care. That can be a very heavy burden. There are a number of individuals with those disabilities who also would really appreciate some assistance, some informed, good, effective assistance in managing the different kinds of care and services that are in their life. Is that something that's important to you? Is that assistance needed? So these are all factors to really think about as you move forward. What to watch out for? There are some benefits that should be coming out of here, and they are very good benefits. Care coordination is one of them. There's a simple fact that you don't have to carry around two cards or be worried about two systems. There are supposed to be additional required benefits, as we've discussed, the vision, the transportation, the dental, and also some discretionary additional home and community-based service benefits. There are also assessments and care plans that can be very helpful to an individual who is faced with many different treatments, many different needs, many different services. So these are things that you or your client should expect with an integrated plan, a managed care plan that handles everything. If everything goes smoothly. And that is, these are important benefits, and it's also a rather big if. There are things to watch out for that are bad. For some of us, it concerns the timing, the fact of confusion and mistakes, especially for those individuals who will be going through transitions. The categories we have are not watertight. Someone who is Medi-Cal only can turn 65, can become eligible for Medicare and become a dual. There are lots of transitions that happen to individuals as their conditions change, as their health changes. How a health plan and how the state handles these transitions in your life is going to be an issue as the whole overall large transition of the coordinated care initiative is going on. Access to providers and disruption of care is, of course, a critical issue for many individuals with disabilities. You have established relationships with the providers for many years, even for decades. The fact that you may not be able to access that provider because he or she is not in a health plan's network is a very, very big concern. And there are some protections, consumer protections, that are intended to preserve that relationship for up to 1 year. But they don't extend at this point beyond 1 year. So that's important to remember. And there are other issues as well. I mean, one of the reasons that the department has given for delaying the implementation date until April is the fact that there is a lot going on right now in healthcare. The state's exchange covered California is going to be starting in the fall in October. There is rural expansion of Medi-Cal to low-income childless adults, the healthy families transition. There is a lot going on, and the CCI added another very significant change. The additional 3 months should help and provide an opportunity for plans and advocates and the department to try to bridge some of these cracks that individuals could otherwise fall through. But it's 3 months is not necessarily going to fix everything. And regardless, a change puts a burden on the people who are undergoing the change. You have to find out about the plans. You have to find out what they offer. You have to find out where your providers are going, where your providers are affiliated with, and whether they are with a plan or whether they may become part of a plan. So, going on to the next. I wanted to add just one moment of a sense of scale to this. So Amber had gone through how many. There are 400,000 duals and essentially over 1 million individuals who may be affected by the coordinated care initiative. So to give you a sense of scale, when seniors and people with disabilities were transitioned to mandatory managed care 2011 to 2012, that involved about 240,000 seniors and people with disabilities. This is bigger. So while the department hopefully has learned from some of the mistakes that happened then, we are also talking about a bigger transition and more things going on right now. So what can you do? The department is holding quarterly stakeholder meetings. And the first one is actually happening next week in Sacramento on August 27th from 1 to 4:30. You can try as an advocate, as an individual, as a beneficiary, to influence how these programs develop. There are stakeholder meetings. You can talk to your plans. You can get involved in legislative advocacy. You can prepare to provide, as an advocate, as a consumer organization, you can prepare yourselves to provide good counsel and good referrals to the individuals that are going to be coming to you and needing some answers. And also critical, report problems to advocates and consumer organizations. It's just important to know what is happening to individuals and to see if there is a systemic problem going on, because those are the ones that we might be able to fix. So one last summary. What is a coordinated care initiative? I'll begin this in a slightly different way. Almost everyone who is eligible for or receives Medi-Cal services in one of the 8 counties affected by the CCI is going to have to get those Medi-Cal services through managed care after April 1st, 2014. So this is going to apply to medical services, such as primary or specialty care and prescription drugs, and to long-term supports and services, such as IHSS, CBAS, or MSSP. So this change is going to apply whether you are only eligible for Medi-Cal, or whether you are dually eligible for both Medi-Cal and Medicare. But if you are dually eligible for both Medi-Cal and Medicare, you can choose to keep getting your Medicare services outside of a managed care plan. But everyone who wants or needs Medi-Cal services will have to choose a managed care plan for those services.
Thank you, Sylvia.
So, yeah, I think that will be it, as I know we're running out of time. Additional questions?
Anna, were there any really good questions that we could address in just a few minutes? I don't want to keep this too much longer after the hour.
Sure. Well, there were a couple questions. Sure. There were a couple questions about switching plans and the timing for switching plans. For instance, if someone is moving from one county to another, or if someone enrolls in one plan but decides it isn't working out for them, you know, what's the timeline for when they're allowed to switch plans?
Individuals who are, and this is true for individuals who have Medi-Cal only or individuals in a CalMediConnect plan, they are able to switch plans at any time. And disenrollment and re-enrollment happens the next month. So if you disenroll in 1 month, the enrollment would begin the next month. So individuals are able to move from plan to plan, though I don't really recommend doing that. I think that any transition, whether it's just from one plan to another, can cause pretty significant disruptions. But it may be necessary in certain circumstances, particularly if a certain provider is in one plan's network and not another, or there are certain services that one plan is offering that another plan is not. So I can see where that could occur, and that's why people are being given the choice to do that. But people should be cautious in doing so, since it could lead to disruptions and the ability to access their providers. As terms of moving from county to county, oh, sorry, Sylvia, do you want to go ahead?
Oh, no, I just wanted to add to the caution in that there is the continuity of care, the protection, the consumer protection, so that if you're moving from fee-for-service, you join a plan and you want, there are one or two really important providers. They're not part of the plan, but you want to keep relationships with them. That protection is supposed to help you be able to keep going to those providers for a year. When you switch from plan to plan, that may have an impact on your continuity of care, on how well you can keep up relationships with providers. And maybe not with the fee-for-service providers you had before. You should be able to keep those. But potentially, if you're with a plan and you actually find a doctor, hey, I kind of like this doctor, can I keep them if I go to another plan? So that answer is really up in the air, and maybe the answer is no. So that's an additional caution to add to the switching from plan to plan.
Great. Route. Well, thank you so much, Amber and Sylvia. I know we've used a little more of your time than we planned, but I also know that you guys are happy to respond to follow-up questions by email. Is there a final slide that has your contact information on it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
So we'll leave that up for a few minutes. We've also shared with everyone the link to the transcript and the audio recording and the slide presentation. So please feel free to contact either Amber or Sylvia or myself if you have any follow-up questions, and also to get more information. And Alyssa points out that you can, anyone can also call Disability Rights California, and their phone number is 1-800-776-5746 in order to be connected to regional office closest to where they're calling from. And Disability Rights California is able to provide individualized assistance for people with disabilities. NSCLC and DREDF, or at least speaking for NSCLC, we mostly provide technical assistance to advocates rather than we can't provide individual representation to consumers. So anything else that you either of you want to add before we sign off, Amber or Sylvia?
Nope, I think that's it. Thank you everyone for participating. Sylvia?
Sorry, let me just turn myself back on. Yes, thank you for participating.
Great. Thanks to everyone. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.